Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the Secrets of Qigong Masters, the radio talk show brought to you by Academy of Qidao, the first and only school in the world offering professional training in Qigong coaching. To find out more about the Academy of Qidao and the Qidao Practitioner Certification Programs, please visit www.qidao.org, Q-I-D-A-O.org. Today, I'm thrilled to interview Dr. Roger Yonke for the third time since the inception of our talk show. Dr. Roger Yonke has studied, practiced, and taught Qigong and Tai Chi since 1967 and practiced clinical Chinese medicine since 1977. He is the Director of Research and Training at the Institute of Integral Qigong and Tai Chi and the co-founder of the National Qigong Association. The Institute of Integral Qigong and Tai Chi is committed to training thousands of teachers who will inform and inspire millions of people throughout the world to heal themselves for free and prove that the most profound medicine is produced within the human system. Welcome to the show, Dr. Roger Yonke.
Hi, Lama. Thank you so much.
It is really great to hear that the book that you recently edited has been published, the medical Qigong text from Chinese medical universities. And I understand that tonight you wanted to discuss more in detail what you understand under the term of medical Qigong and perhaps suggest some alternative language for calling this.
Yes, thank you. Well, I should say, first of all, that regarding the book that you are referring to, there's actually people can get a little information on this by going to one of my websites, and I'll give that right now. It's IIQTC. That's for the Institute of Integral Qigong and Tai Chi. And it's IIQTC.org. And on that front page, you'll find a click to that book and with a little bit more information on it. It's important for everyone to know that the team of translators and editors for this book was a large national team. The initiative was launched by the University of Maryland, which University of Maryland Integrative Medical Program, which is one of the most successful integrative medicine programs in the world, which is directed by Brian Berman. And you can look this all up, you know, University of Maryland Medical School, Integrative Medicine, Brian Berman, B-E-R-M-A-N. And one of his key colleagues is a really good close friend of mine and someone who is a close friend of Qigong and Tai Chi, and that is Kevin Chen. Kevin Chen was the American side leader of this translation team along with the original editor from China. This is the medical Qigong book from China that is the official medical Qigong book used in Chinese medical schools. Now, what's really interesting about this is that it gets into a huge pile of historic detail, which we won't get into too much, but maybe we can talk about another time. But just let me suffice to say that there's a reason why the Chinese decided to use the word medical with Qigong, and we'll talk about that as we go a little further into this discussion. The thing that I just want to leave it at for right now is that everybody's kind of wondering, well, what is medical Qigong? And in the Western world, one of the ways that we make things seem more important or more expensive or more worthwhile is to put it together with medicine, because as a society, we believe that the only people who can ever understand us are experts experts in medicine, experts in law, experts in education, experts in religion, experts in science. And I personally, having studied Qigong and Tai Chi since 1967, been to China 8 times, practiced for 30 years as a doctor of Oriental medicine, and have written a couple of books and so forth, I feel like fairly oriented to this body of information. And if there's one thing that Qigong teaches us, it is that the most profound medicine is in the human being. In other words, my most profound medicine is in me. Your most profound medicine is in you. And anyone else's most profound medicine is in them. And it is something that I think that the average Qigong practitioner arrives at understanding fairly quickly, is that the idea that you get medicine from somewhere else is perhaps faulty, but maybe let's don't say that. We'll just say that it's unnecessary in many, many, many cases, maybe most cases, if you're in a situation where you can tap into the natural capacity to make medicine within your own system.
In other words, it is misleading at the best, and perhaps confusing and misinforming at worst.
Well, I would say it the other way around. I think it's naturally kind of a mistake that our society makes to think this way. Mm-hmm. So that's probably not the worst thing. That's just, I mean, we're average people. We grow up in families. We learn from the people that we grow up with. Nobody really shared this kind of information with people, so they just don't know. So
right.
That's not the worst. What's worst is the misleading. And I think that there's probably nobody out there that you could say misleads people on purpose in the healthcare field. But there's a lot of just a lack of information. You know, we believe, for instance, that we can live however we want to, and then later we'll get sick, and then we'll go to a doctor, and our insurance company will pay for it, and then we'll be fixed. And this is just a terribly faulty idea, particularly when you place it next to the alternative idea, which is without having to do very much and without having to spend a whole lot of extra money, we can actually keep ourselves well. And this is like some kind of a well-kept secret in our society when it should actually be common knowledge, you know, shared with children in school, people in church, military people in the military, and, you know, everybody at work and in their athletic pursuits. This should be absolutely common, like the grass growing out of the ground or the sand on the beach. And yet, it's not. It's like an esoteric insight that the human being has the capacity to self-regenerate, which is just silly because we've got mountains and mountains of science. Back to you.
Well, and let me ask you this. How does the process of self-regeneration work, and what does it have to do with Qigong? In particular, we can talk about some relatively straightforward experiences of self-healing, like, you know, you get cut or an abrasion, your body will be able to regenerate itself somehow, and to more advanced or more complex healing processes.
Well, I would say that this is my understanding and probably just, you know, one person's opinion. So it's very important for this whole discussion, I think, for the listeners to understand, you know, we're listening to the insights of a particular individual, someone who's put a lot of time, effort, and energy into it, like a lifetime of professional energy and insight into it. But at the same time, if we really think about it for a minute, from whom would we get anything but an opinion? So it's important to know that these are my opinions and insights. The human being is either biological primarily and energetic secondarily, or the human being is energetic primarily and biological secondarily. And my personal belief is that the natural state of the human condition is that we are energetic in nature before we become physical in nature. And so the underlying mechanism for self-regeneration exists in the pattern of the energetic being. And that pattern is either expressed unrestrained, so that pattern of well-being is expressed unrestrained, or that pattern of well-being is not expressed unrestrained. And with the stresses that we have in our lives and the lack of information that we live with on a regular basis and the possibility that we don't really know how the world works or where we are in the universe, so all these things are causes for the fact that the natural expression of well-being would be suppressed or restrained. Now, some people would say, well, does that mean then that if I'm not well, it's my fault? And I really don't like answering that question, because people, including myself, like to find fault someplace else. We want to ascribe the reason for why things are occurring outside of ourselves. And, you know, it's to a certain extent, we could call that a victim-like perspective. And I do not feel comfortable telling any one person that they are basically expressing victim-like perspectives. However, in general, speaking very much in general, not any one person anywhere, I feel, and I include myself in this, that the extent to which my well-being is expressed, natural well-being, my natural eternal soul-level well-being can be suppressed or restrained either by false ideas, by habits that are not health-generating habits. I think you understand what I mean. So my view would be that the natural capacity for self-regeneration is inherent within all beings, and that our behaviors, that's got to do with our body as well as our thinking, and our emotional and mental lives have a supreme influence on the extent to which we express our natural capacity for total wholeness or total well-being.
Wow. This was a very sophisticated and a rather esoteric answer, if you will. Let me ask you, Roger, what is the role of Qigong in addressing this restraint that may be placed somehow on our well-being, or an expression of our well-being, or perhaps how can we do something instead of restraining our well-being?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think there are two ways of asking the same question, and that is, I think the better one to go with would be to say, how does Qigong support us in removing that restraint to the natural expressiveness of our inherent well-being? And right. There's two pretty easy ways to describe this. One is that by disassociating from the complexities of our life, and there's an easy way to do this, is that you simply do not, for the moment, and this could be any one moment, it could be an extended period of moments, like for a practice, let's say if we're going to do a practice for 45 minutes or an hour, and it want to be an extended period of practice wherein moment to moment, on purpose, with intent, we elect, using our will and our intelligence, all of this comes under what the Chinese call xin, X-I-N, the heart-mind. We elect to disassociate from the victories and defeats of the past, and we elect on purpose with intent to disassociate with our excitement and anxiety about the future and just ride in the present moment where there's basically not much happening, particularly if you're doing Qigong and Tai Chi. It's going along very slowly. Your breaths are deep and slow and relaxed and so forth. So what happens there, and there's mountains of research on this, is that when a person disassociates from the past and the future, there's no content, and the part of the intelligence that is either frustrated or excited about what happened in the past, or anxious or excited about what's going to happen in the future, the part of our being that is involved with that doesn't have anything to do. Some people call that the ego. Some people call that the Chinese call it xin, heart-mind. And when the heart-mind is not busy worrying about either the past or the future, it has a direct influence on the nervous system. And so the nervous system naturally trends towards homeostasis, taking along with it the entire functional self. And so as the nervous system trends towards balance out of the sympathetic and into the parasympathetic, and as the neurotransmitters that are produced within the human system, then there's your medicine. The body is making medicine all the time, either speed or healing molecules. And so we naturally go towards making healing molecules. The systems, the nervous system, the circulatory system, the digestive system, and all of the other systems, endocrine system, immune system, all of those systems naturally regulate themselves towards well-being. In the absence of the conditioning of the personality. So when you do Qigong, you disassociate from the personality because there's no personality in the present. It only exists in the past and the future. So that's one way, is that by disassociating from the personality, we have a powerful influence on the nervous system and the body's natural productivity of healing resources, including turning on the immune cells, shifting the neurotransmitter profile, and so forth. Now, the second.
And let me ask you that perhaps it has to do with actually associating with the current experience. So we don't only dissociate, we actually focus our attention on what we're experiencing at the moment, right? So we don't just go numb to what's happening right now.
No.
We actually become acutely aware of what's happening, experiencing full acceptance, or at least practicing acceptance. Because
perfect.
Without
well,
acceptance...
Very well said.
Without acceptance, it's really hard
to
experience something fully. We will just
correct.
Tend to resist or struggle against that.
So I think we have agreement on the first way, which is a body-oriented result, which arises from the will and the intelligence making the decision to focus, have a radical attentiveness to the present moment, which you stated very nicely a moment ago. The second thing that happens is a non-body associated process, but it has an influence on the body, which is that in the absence of the past and the future, we are naturally in the, you know, I'll put quotes around it, the eternal now. There's a whole school of thought around this concept of present moment focus. There's also a school of thought around the whole idea that in the absence of paying attention to the multiplicity, the layers of life, the past, the present, and the future, and just isolating our attention into the present, that we're actually tapping infinity. And what's interesting about that is that in that state, which could be called the Qigong state, which could also be called the oneness state, could also be called the non-dual state, in that state, what we believe to be true, according to the great thinkers and the great practitioners of Qigong and Tai Chi, including perhaps yourself and myself, is that when we go into that state of radical attentiveness to the now, we're actually in a relationship with the part of ourself that is whole, and that we are in a relationship with the aspect, with direct relationship with the part of ourself that is eternally well, the part of ourself that cannot get sick and does not die. And you know, this starts to sound a little trippy or esoteric, but
or at least metaphysical. Or at least metaphysical to some extent.
Yeah, so anyway, those are the two ways. One is that you shift the nervous system and your body reflects less stress, and therefore it moves naturally towards a state of greater well-being. And the second way, and they happen at the same time, the second way is that when you tap into the now, you're connecting with your eternal self, the part of yourself that isn't just here in the four dimensions, but it's the part of yourself that has other dimensional, you know, they say in string theory, there are 13 dimensions, and and you and I are experiencing four of those dimensions, and simple math, 13 minus 4 equals 9. So there's potentially 9 dimensions where we actually have some sort of an existence that we don't even know about due to limits of our capacity to experience through our sensory system. So it's just an amazingly beautiful tool, Qigong, to be able to support healing from these two very powerful perspectives simultaneously.
Absolutely. And let me remind our listeners that we're listening to the interview with Dr. Raja Yonke. And if you're interested in calling in with any questions, please feel free to call 347-327-9635. Once again, you're listening to the interview with Dr. Roger Yonke. And the phone number to call with any questions is 347-327-9635. Now, let me ask you, Dr. Yonke, what is it that we nowadays called medical Qigong, and why is the term medical Qigong something that you think is not appropriate or not the best term for it?
Well, let's go back to the medical Qigong book from China. The reason why I was so honored to be asked by the translation team at the University of Maryland to translate the clinical chapters of this book was that I've had so many different people present so many different definitions of medical Qigong. And by the way, I don't think that any definition is the final definition. In other words, everybody's opinion about medical Qigong is legal and appropriate, and the more enthusiastic we are about the things that we believe in, you know, the more dynamic and interesting the world is. But I wanted to go to the what is the story on medical Qigong from China today? And I wanted to be the first person in the United States to read that material and to be, to a certain extent, have the honor to translate that into, I don't translate Chinese to English very well, but I do translate not very well translated Chinese to English to much more easy to use English. And with my background in Chinese medicine, I was the perfect person to actually for them to ask to do this. And so it was years ago when we started this project, and I wanted to know, what is the definition of medical Qigong from China? And I'll try to succinctly say this, because it's so interesting. In the beginning of that book, and by the way, I recommend that everybody write this down, because if you find this conversation interesting, I would really recommend that you get a copy of that book. And that book is available at that webpage that I gave you a moment ago. I'll say it again, iiqtc.org. And if you look around on the front page, you'll find a click to the to that medical Qigong book, and you can purchase it. Now, there's a discount on that book of $10, but I've got a secret password that can get you another $10 off. So let me give you that word right now, and that is DAO, as in Dao, DAO. So when you click to check out, a little box will show up, and if you put the word DAO in there, it'll take another $10 off of this book for you. So in the first part,
how much is the price of the book in general?
The book is $89. We give one discount to everybody, which brings it down to $79. And then if you're listening to this show today and you use the word DAO, it'll take it down to $69.
Fantastic.
So, I really recommend this book, and there's a reason why it's not the greatest book in the world, and I hope you'll ask me about it later, but let me tell you about why it is an incredible book right now. And people who've studied into Qigong will understand this, I think. In the beginning of the book, it says that medical Qigong depends on a diagnosis. Now, what does that do? What that does is that it puts the whole field of medical Qigong into the hands of people who know how to do Chinese diagnosis.
And it has to be Chinese diagnosis, no other diagnosis, right? It doesn't
correct.
Have to be...
Correct.
A Western diagnosis is not going to do the Ayurvedic diagnosis or Tibetan medical diagnosis is not going to do. It has to be Chinese.
Well, in the case of Chinese medical Qigong, yes.
Uh-huh. Okay.
However, I want to keep reflecting back on the fact that I'm not a fan of the idea that we're talking about right now. I'm actually, personally, I have a contrary view, which will show up here in just a moment. I think you'll find this absolutely fascinating. So in the first part of the book, it says that you got to know how to get a diagnosis. And what I mean by that whole paradigm of diagnosis is that any doctor anywhere who has the skill to do a diagnosis that a patient doesn't, then has the potential to be in a relationship with that patient where they're considered to be an expert. And my goal, my personal view, my philosophy is that the problem in the world is that we don't believe in ourselves and that we think that we need an expert when we get into trouble. And so let's follow this track here for just a moment. So what happens when you get to the treatment chapters, which are the chapters that I did the translation for, the editorial for, it becomes obvious that the diagnosis is not that important. So think of it this way. You're reading a book, and in the beginning of the book, it says you need a diagnosis. At the end of the book, you realize that actually what it said in the beginning of the book was not exactly true. And so to me, here's the awesome, liberating power of this book and this conversation that we're having about it. And this is the deconstructive moment. And, I mean, different people deconstruct things at different moments, but there's a deconstructive opportunity here for people who are understanding what I'm talking about and interested in this topic. And that is that Chinese medical Qigong is called medical Qigong for a particular reason. Now, I think it's important for us to describe that reason right now, because otherwise... Well, if we let this go, what happens, if we don't get to this piece of information, what happens is that we have to live on in a world where experts rule. And once I've given you the reason, the historic reason for why the Chinese used the word medical with Qigong, and we realized that it was just a political tool or could we call it a policy tool? So it goes like this. In the 1911, there was the last emperor. So everybody saw that movie called The Last Emperor. Well, that was the end of Imperial China. And then from that date until the 40s and 50s, when the Chinese communists and the Chinese nationalists had a battle for many years and just about destroyed the entire society, the communists won, Mao Zedong, we know all about that. When Mao Zedong got into power, it wasn't enough, so they had to go one more step. They had to say, we need a cultural revolution so we can remove all what we call superstition and evidence of imperial living. Well, what happened during that period of time is that every kind of qigong was associated with imperial. The peasants, the average person, was a slave to the imperial Confucianistic hierarchical government. And so they had to throw out qigong basically completely. So there was no more qigong. It was not safe to be involved with qigong. If you were doing qigong, you were either from the academia, which was against the new social order, or you were from the military, which is against the new military social order, or you're with the imperial government, which is absolutely against the social order, or you were an artist, and the arts, the folk arts, but not the high arts, were allowed after the revolution. So basically, qigong.
Let's not forget that there was also a number of spiritual traditions involving qigong, such as Taoist qigong, Buddhist qigong, Confucianist qigong, and so on. And that was, of course, against the law to practice any religion during the communist regime. Well, still is to many, to some extent.
And even now, to a certain extent. So, those people who were surviving, who knew a little bit about qigong or a lot about qigong, were basically having to be quiet about it, or be at risk for losing their life. And at one point, Mao said, and I remember this forever because I studied it. When we studied Chinese medicine, one of the things that we study right at the beginning is that Mao started the whole concept of the barefoot doctor to recover the national heritage of Chinese medicine from ruin, because it was basically they were killing all the doctors and burning all the books and so forth. And eventually Mao said, now, wait a minute. If we keep going, we won't have a medical system, we won't have an educational system, we have to stop. And so at that point they stopped the Cultural Revolution, and about 10 years later, in the period between 1970 and 1975, a few people figured out how to get qigong back into the mix, and the answer for accomplishing that was to say medical qigong. So it wasn't Taoist, Buddhist, Confucianist, military, court, academic, or any other kind of superstitious or imperial form of qigong. It was, quote, medical qigong. So basically, medical qigong is the hiding place in China. Medical qigong is the hiding place for the beautiful, rich tradition that we are all so absolutely fascinated with. And I've been to China
just,
8 times.
I just did a little search for Cultural Revolution on Wikipedia, wondering if it actually ended with the order of Mao Zedong. And it seems like it officially ended with his death in 1976. So apparently he never got over the idea of Cultural Revolution. Probably,
well, you know, I'm not sure about that, because I was living in Hawaii at the very time when Mao Zedong died, and I was studying Chinese medicine on that day. On the day of Mao Zedong's passing, I was in Chinese medicine school, and we had already studied the idea that the Cultural Revolution was concluded in terms of medicine. So, you know, we could debate, we could split hairs about dates on things, but I think the most important thing that we want to get to here so that we can go on to the next thing is that there's only one reason for the existence of medical qigong in China, and that is because it was the only way to be able to resurrect Qigong and bring it back into the society. Do you understand what I mean?
So in other words, that was the way to get Qigong back into the limelight through the back door. There was a political ploy or a trick.
The front door.
To the front door.
Well, it was definitely a ploy or a trick.
Got it.
So now the most important thing that we want to say next is that if medical Qigong is only medical because it needed to be called that to be able to create a safe haven for Qigong in China, for the Chinese society, mm-hmm. then we have to ask the question, was it called medical Qigong because it needed to be medical, or was it called medical Qigong because it needed something to be safe? And the answer is that it needed to be safe. Now, here in the Western world, medical Qigong is, we don't have that reason. We don't live under Mao Zedong. We're not experiencing a cultural revolution. And it is inappropriate and pretty much useless to use the Chinese rationale for naming Qigong medical Qigong here in the United States. Now, here's why we use it in the United States. Here's why we use it in the United States, and I think you'll find this probably a little provocative, and I hope you don't mind me saying it, is that here in the United States, people use the words medical Qigong to separate themselves into an expert context, because we in the Western world are afraid to live our lives without experts, and therefore we can get, I know this sounds cynical, and I want to look for ways, you know, as a director of a training institution, we think about this all the time. You know, what is the best language for Qigong in our society? What is the best way not to create an imperial Qigong, which is expert-based and costs too much, but to create a Jeffersonian or democratic Qigong that's available to all people? And when we talk about it being available to all people, we're talking about all people being able to get in touch with their eternal nature, and all people being able to modify their internal environment to heal themselves. So the point is that in the Western world, medicine sounds like something that you have to get from an expert. And what we know from Qigong is that the medicine is made within the human being. So this idea that we need a medical Qigong person to save us is just more of that thing that we do as a society, which is giving away our power, throwing away money on things that we don't need because we don't trust ourselves. Now, again,
so in other words, those people
cynical.
Oh, I'm sorry to interrupt you. I was just curious to see that. So the people who are the practitioners of medical Qigong basically are the people who kind of usurp the power of knowledge and expertise. That they can diagnose and treat diseases using Qigong as a medical therapeutic tool instead of empowering the millions of people to take care of themselves, using Qigong as a wellness discipline.
Well, first of all, it's really important for me to say that some of my most valued colleagues are practitioners of what they call medical Qigong. And as a training institution, we actually teach the people who graduate from our programs to understand the conversation that we're having here today. And we encourage them, if they're going to use the words medical Qigong, to do it in a context wherein what it means is that you're using Qigong to turn on a natural medicine within your own being.
Right.
And that you're allowed to do that by yourself if you want to. Or you're allowed to have somebody else, you know, say, look, I'm too busy or I'm too sick. I've got to have somebody who's going to work this medical Qigong thing for me because I'm I'm just unable to do it for myself. There are some people who feel like they want to be in relationships with patients or clients, or to be, you know, shall we say, detectives and untangle medical mysteries. But I think that it's important to understand that something that you did say, which kind of got my attention, which is usurping the power. I don't like the word exactly usurping. It sounds a little aggressive to me, but what I would say is, and I know you didn't mean it aggressively, but what I would say is, if a person who is a Qigong practitioner, that is a professional, a teacher, or even a therapist, is in the process of consistently liberating the patient from the false idea that the healing energy is coming from somewhere outside of themselves. If the medical Qigong practitioner is absolutely vigilant to not disempower the person by helping them, then I don't think it's really a problem, you know, because anybody who's empowering people on a regular basis, why would we care what they call anything? Because it's all about empowerment and all about liberation from false assumption. However, there are a lot of people who are basically setting up doctor's offices, and people are sitting around in waiting rooms reading magazines, you know, like you do in a regular doctor's office. And you go and you have your medical Qigong treatment from the wizard of medicine, who mentions nothing about the natural power of the human being. And therefore, as that person is leaving, instead of feeling empowered and enthusiastic about the fact that they can, you know, take control of their own lives, they're standing at the front desk signing up for another appointment. And I feel like the question about Medi-Qigong comes down to one thing, and that is, if it's medical because you want to be in power and control the situation, collect a fee, and leave the customer believing that they are disassociated from the natural power of the universe, I would say that not only is that not a good thing, I would say that that's probably even some sort of, like, I don't know, nasty karma. And then if the medical Qigong practitioner is moment to moment reminding the person of their natural power, supporting them in becoming enthusiastic about paying attention to their own life, then calling that medical Qigong is fine, because the problem with the word medical, not in China, but here, is that that word is a disempowering word. It's a word that that compromises self-reliance. And we live in a society that's supposedly based on self-reliance. And look at this health cost crisis. I mean, it's ridiculous. Over 80% of all diseases are preventable, and all we're doing is treating preventable diseases. It's like throwing money away. It's embarrassing, and it's, well, it's, you know, I think it's tragic and wrong, and I want to be a part of how the world is a better place in some way or another. And so my point, my hot-button point for this evening, is to support people in understanding that medical Qigong is an awesome body of information. It's not really any different than Taoist Qigong, Buddhist Qigong, and all the other beautiful forms of Qigong, because it was named medical because it had to be named medical. Here in the Western world, when we use the word medical, let me finish this statement. Here in the Western world, when we use that word medical, what it does is it separates the individual from their natural capacity to heal themselves and become an empowered citizen in this terribly dysfunctionally and disempowered nation.
And this was particularly interesting for me to see people like yourself and Kevin Chan, who is involved with the Institute of Self-Healing. be involved also with this book on medical Qigong. And then, of course, in one of your emails to me, you recently mentioned that the medical Qigong is the worst title for healing practices. And so you mentioned that you would actually suggest a better language for naming this set of practices. What would you suggest to call it instead of medical Qigong?
Well, you know, I'm not really sure exactly. In China, it would just be called Qigong, period. That's it. You wouldn't put a descriptor on it. And for instance, I've been to China a bunch of times, and I've often said to people, well, are you a Buddhist, or are you a Taoist, or are you a Confucianist? And they say yes. And the reason they say yes is because they don't have religious institutions. Those are philosophical points of view. And Taoism is all about nature, and so why wouldn't you say yes to that? And Confucianism is all about family, and why wouldn't you say yes to that? And Buddhism is all about understanding the nature of the mind, and why wouldn't you say yes to that? So in here we have to say, oh, I'm a Catholic, or I'm a Jew, or I'm a Protestant, or a Presbyterian. But there, when you say, are you a Taoist, a Buddhist, or a Confucianist, the person says yes. Because they want to know everything about how the world works. So
exactly.
What I'd like to suggest about this language is that instead of me saying what I think it should be, which I'm not really inclined to that. I think that a powerful, dynamic conversation is out there. And what I wanted to do, and I really appreciate you inviting me on your show to discuss this topic, because I think it's a powerful, powerful, powerful topic, and it's a separating topic, because the people who decide to use the word medicine as a way to build a business and create a clientele and disempower that clientele and collect a fee and never tell them about how powerful they are themselves, I think that's a problem. And the people who are out there using the word medical to mean there's a medicine within you and you can learn how to turn it on. And let me show you. Let me help you. Okay, I'll help you today. You know, you give me the fee. I'm going to teach you some things that you can practice yourself. I'm going to help you to create or understand or have an experience of qi. And then I'm going to suggest you come to my qigong cultivation classes, because that's the path to I don't want to say like the path to truth or the path to honesty. You know, it's not a wrong thing to help another person, but if you help another person and then leave them with the impression that they can't help themselves, that to me is a problem. And so instead of suggesting a different language, I would really encourage everybody on the line to think to themselves, yeah, well, what would you call it? You know, if you weren't going to call it medical, you know, what would you call it? And, you know, wellness, health promotion. We have some classes. We have a class called Integral Energetics. Integral Energetics means to use the natural energetics of nature and oneself to create more a higher level of internal integrity, body, mind, and spirit. So that's maybe one thought that I have about it is using the word integral, the words integral energetics. But mind-body maximization, you know, wow, we have a program called Mind-Body Max, so that's another kind of language. Or we could say the self-healing practices, self-initiated healing. We used to call it self-applied health enhancement methods, Qigong, self-applied health enhancement methods, Sahem, S-A-H-E-M. So there's a lot of really good language out there, I think, and I would encourage people to really just get into it and, you know, get on your Facebook, get on your Twitter, get on your with your buddies, you know, go out with your girlfriends, talk about it, go out with your guy friends, play drums, shout at the moon, you know, talk about the nature of life and how do we turn on the medicine within and use Qigong to do it. And can we call that medical? Yes, we can, because the medicine is within us. But we can also call it something else. I'm not sure what it should be.
Well, and let me remind our listeners that we are listening to the interview with Dr. Roger Yonke. If you would like to call in with any questions regarding medical Qigong or any other questions for Dr. Yonke, please call 347-327-9635. We have a lot of callers. We have a lot of listeners on the call, so everyone who has a burning question about the medical Qigong or as an alternative would like to discuss directly right now live on the call the topic of naming Qigong as an alternative to the word medical Qigong, feel free to call 347-327-9635. Now, Dr. Yonke, let me ask you what you think about the idea of training, professional training in Qigong, because there are quite a few organizations nowadays in the United States that offer training for Qigong professionals, either for Qigong instructors or actually Qigong therapists. Or there is one school, at least maybe two or three, who even issue certificates of a Qigong master. What do you think of that?
Well, you know, in the Western world, we have what's called a master's degree. Uh-huh. And I think that at a certain level of study, by Western definition, you could use the word master or mastery. I personally tend to avoid it. If somebody says, you know, Master Jonke, you know, here's Master Jonke, whatever, I tend to wave that off. I'm really not interested in that so much. And definitely there's a lot of people out there who've decided that they are masters, call themselves that. I think it's a little bit ridiculous. I really don't like to get too tangled up in that conversation because it's another one of those places where we're separating and hierarchical. And one of the things that's powerful about the American ideal is that it is focused on the concept of all people being created equal, and those individuals who become experts in something to be acknowledged by virtue of people paying attention to them and honoring what they say. The use of the word master qualifying a person as a master by virtue of having been to a class. Like, for instance, I'm a Reiki master, and I've been to a bunch of Reiki weekends. To me, I don't feel comfortable calling myself a Reiki master just because somebody decided that they were going to put on a little business and create a Reiki master certificate in a weekend. I've been through 3 Reiki master weekends. I don't even remember what I'm a master of, because the whole thing I felt was kind of distressing, and I'd rather operate in a system where people are not constantly trying to upgrade themselves. Our natural capacity as a soul is enough. We have a brilliant, brilliant natural self. It doesn't have to graduate from any kind of a school to be just an awesome player in the game of life. And so anyway, there you go with the master thing. Let me talk a little bit about the schools. There's a lot of schools out there. As a doctor of Oriental medicine, I watched the number of colleges for Chinese medicine go from 1. The first college of Oriental medicine was in Wyoming, believe it or not, back in the United States. The first college in North America was actually in Vancouver. I was a student of that college. One of the first, probably the third one, was in Hawaii. That's where I studied Chinese medicine in 1975 and 76 and 77. And
right.
So the schools in Qigong are very new. And by the way, we've already discussed the fact that the Qigong does not necessarily need to be a medical discipline. It's a
Absolutely
personal
not.
Discipline. And so these schools will never need to be medical schools, except that there will be people, and there are probably a bunch of them on the phone, who want them to be medical schools, because everybody wants to play doctor. And, you know, who doesn't want to help people? You know, we all want to help people. And I think the way to help people is to turn them on to their natural power. And so the school that I'm the most interested in, and I don't pay too much attention to the other schools, is the Institute of Integral Qigong and Tai Chi. Birth happened actually at Santa Barbara School College of Oriental Medicine. That College of Oriental Medicine has recently closed because of the fact that there are very many Chinese medicine schools right now. And so the Qigong and Tai Chi Teacher Training Institute at the College of Oriental Medicine here in Santa Barbara was then transformed into the Institute of Integral Qigong and Tai Chi in the year 2000. And we have now graduated 300 people from a 200-hour teacher program. And they learn about medical Qigong, the basics. And we have courses that actually are introductory courses that come before the 200 hours that have information about medical Qigong. This is what we call integral energetics. We're going to be doing our first integral energetics program at the Omega Institute in New York next September. And all of this information is available on IIQTC.org. Now, one more thing to say about the schools is that it really depends on a couple of things, and I'll just say this very briefly. If the goal is to mystify and elevate people to the state of mastery, or master, I should say, because I think that anybody can elevate themselves to mastery, this whole concept of master, if the school is based on the idea of separating people out and making some people be more like the master, other people more like can't be the master because there's only one master and that person had I, and then they're only going to appoint one person. And I mean, that way it takes forever to be able to infuse Qigong and Tai Chi into our society. Our model at the Institute of Integral Qigong and Tai Chi, and we honor the great masters, we honor the great origins, we also understand the nature of the democratization of empowerment, because if empowerment is not democratized, it's like Imperial China. It's like a feudal system. The Jeffersonian ideal for Qigong is to have every person understand their own inalienable rights, which were discussed by Jefferson in our Constitution, in our Declaration of Independence, to be able to make contact with the natural universal qi. And that is the baseline of the Institute of Integral Qigong and Tai Chi. We teach people that they don't have to go through a master. They can go directly to a relationship with their own eternal nature, if you want to say into a relationship, a direct relationship with the divine source, or if you want to use the Chinese word to say to go into an unrestrained and direct relationship with Tao.
I see several people have been lining up in the queue to ask questions.
Would you,
if you don't mind, I would like to start with the first caller from Santa Barbara area, actually. Hello. Go ahead.
Yeah, because I'm afraid that we're going to get into questions, and then I won't be able to say this. So let me just say it very briefly. Is that remember about the book we talked about, and giving you an extra discount on that book, use the word DAO. When you go to IIQTC, look up the Medical Qigong book. Plus, we've just launched a whole bunch of holiday discounts on books and DVDs. So when people go to that page and you see that Christmas wreath, give a click there, because you can get as much as 25% off, and they'll wrap it and send it anywhere in the world. So I want to be sure that people, you know, we're excited about Qigong. We want to share this with our families. One of my books, which is called The Healer Within, is very accessible approach to Qigong. And our DVD is broken down into little 10-minute Qigong practices, which are extremely powerful. And those, just those two books in a pack, wrapped for your mom, for your uncle, you know, for the people going off to college. I just wanted to put that in there because I don't think we're gonna get swept away into the questions, and it would be hard to come back.
Excellent. Yes, definitely. I've read your books, and they are excellent introductions to Qigong for the beginners. Now, the caller from Santa Barbara area, from 805 area code, you're on air. Please announce yourself and feel free to ask your question.
I must be the only 805 area code person. This is Rhonda. Hi.
Yes.
Hi, Roger.
Hi,
Lama.
Rhonda.
Thanks for putting on the show with Dr. Yonka tonight. I had a couple of comments. One is that when Dr. Yonka was talking, I was thinking of that Zen koan that talks about when you meet the Buddha on the road, kill him. Well, it's almost like a corollary of that could be, if you meet the Qigong master on the road, you better kill him, because it's the teaching, not the teacher. And I've heard Dr. Yonka say that before. The second thing, this is a question for Dr. Yonka. Do you think that the term medical Qigong is a way for, say, a way to regulate those types of practices? To make it more palatable in, say, like a hospital situation, or, you know, in a more clinical setting? Do you think that some people use that to make it a more, kind of like get an inroad into certain venues where it wouldn't have been possible before?
Yes, yes. And thank you, Rhonda. I hope you're well and glad you're well. And I appreciate the question. That is actually the beauty of this medical Qigong book, because just as much as I've been in the process here this evening of it, we're hair splitting. So one half of this little thin hair is medical Qigong is disempowering. The other half of this very thin hair that we're splitting here is that medical Qigong can be quite empowering. And if you read this book, it's a beautiful book. And it's interesting that even post the Maoist challenge in China, that this book is very, very rich in heritage. It may not be everything, because many people were killed and many books were burned. But there's a lot in this book. And it is a big, fat book. So when you get your $10 discount and then your second $10 discount, that is one amazing price per pound. It's probably one of the most interesting books. Well, of course, I'm very, very biased. I've helped to work on this book, and I'm a Qigong crazy myself. So everything about Qigong is fascinating to me. But what's important to see, when you go to that book, everything in that book can be learned and practiced by average individuals. Now, they're probably not average individuals going to buy and read this book, because it would put them to sleep and confuse them. But everybody out there who's teaching Qigong, and I really want to encourage you to take this on, everybody out there who's teaching Qigong, take a peek at this book. It is a beautiful, beautiful heritage book. And there's some practices in there that are just gorgeous. And unfortunately, it's not DVDs, and it's not it doesn't have a lot of pictures in it, so you've got to read these practices. But there's one in there that I remember when I translated this practice when I did the editorial on this practice when I was working on the book, I just went into Qigong land, and it's called Floating and Merging. Floating and Merging. And there's this two sides of the practice, where first you do this floating thing, and then you do the merging. And I only wish we had time to do it. Just beautiful. There is a lot of really good stuff in this book. So what I'm saying to Rhonda's question is that the use of the word medical could easily become a part of how Qigong would find its way into hospitals and medical programs. But here's where I would put my foot down. And you know, I'm just one person. I want to just announce to everybody out there, I was born in Cincinnati. I do not have any kind of esoteric parents. I had loving parents and spiritual parents, but they were not oriented to Qigong or Tai Chi. Well, my mom did Tai Chi, and she loved it. But the point is that I don't have any background or any genetic heritage around Qigong. The only reason I love it is because it's so incredibly engaging and lovable. And so when we use the word medical, if we use it to disempower, if we use it to say, well, you've got to have this diagnosis, if we use it to say that you sit over there and I'm going to sit over here and you're the patient and I'm going to fix you, if that's the version of medical Qigong that makes its way into our society, it will be like a prison instead of a liberation. And so I hope, as Rhonda does, I'm sure, that the word medical Qigong will be used as a way to leverage Qigong into medical environments, but to not do the thing that is often done in medical environments, which is disempowering people and separating them from their natural capacity for enlightenment and in learning about themselves and practicing how to be a more well individual. Great question, Rhonda. Thank you.
Thanks, Roger. Thanks, Lama, for doing this tonight. I'm really enjoying it. Thank you.
And it's great to talk to you, Rhonda. Thank you for calling. And we have another caller from the area code 720. You are on air. Please announce yourself and ask your questions.
Roger, Rama, Anthony from Boulder. Both of you are doing well. I do have an interesting question. Roger, how would you suggest we get people past the hierarchical systems? Quite often in this country, it's not just a cultural issue. It's both a business issue and an ego issue. And if we're going to teach in a non-hierarchical way, how do we get to people who are expecting that?
Yeah, Anthony, that is such a great question, and I really appreciate you asking it. And it's a great Jeffersonian question, right? I mean, this is you're picking right up on, and this is the beauty of this whole. By the way, I want to just let people know that Anthony is someone that I know well. He was actually interviewed on this show last week, and his internet blog. Do you want to just go ahead and say the name of that very briefly?
Oh, we pushed that enough last week, Roger. It's about you tonight.
Okay, good. So the question that you're asking is really, it's almost like Mao Zedong, who I am not a fan of, and I am not a communist or a socialist or any of that ism type of conversation. But what happened was that in the world, it used to be kings and gentry living in big houses and people living like slaves, you know, providing, etc. And somewhere along the line, there was a threshold wherein a democratization of society started to kick in. The American dream, the American vision is a part of that. But Anthony is really asking a big philosophical, socio-philosophical question here, and tying it into the Qigong world. And I really personally believe that it's the messaging. And so when the Qigong teacher is teaching, how is that coming across? It's coming across as if to say, I know something you don't know, and I'm going to put you into this state, and the reason that you're going to have the experience that you're going to have is because of me, not because of you. And then even if the person doesn't do that, in other words, if the message is not disempowering, the people in the class, because of the fact that Qigong is so powerful, will actually believe, because of their own disempowered nature, they will believe the teacher has done something to them. And the only thing that the teacher has done is create an environment. So if after the class, when the person comes up and says, oh my gosh, you know, I need to bow down, or you must be my guru, or how did you make that happen, or let me kiss your hand, or, you know, how can I ever thank you for, you know, making my life different in this way? It's the messaging. Right there, it's going to be the message. And if the teacher says, if the teacher becomes, shall we say, allured by the classic, I mean, who doesn't want to be a powerful person? Who doesn't want to be a teacher? Who doesn't want to be a doctor? Who doesn't want to make the world a better place? So when people start to idolize the teacher, there is the critical moment. And I would say that primarily at the Institute of Integral Qigong and Tai Chi, we really spend a lot of our academic learning time understanding the nature of nature and the nature of any one person's connection with the power of the universe. And so if the teacher gives the message that says, well, I'm glad you're feeling well, I'm thrilled that you had a really special experience, and even if you had a connection with someone who I've had all these things happen in my class, even if you had a pain that you had go away, or you feel like a disease that's been bothering you for a long time is shifting right now, if you had an experience of having a conversation with someone who died and you needed to have a conversation with them and couldn't because they were dead, but you did today in my class, it's not because of me. It's because of the Qigong. It's because of the power of what happens when you get into the present moment. It's me supporting you in understanding something about yourself. And I think that if we're vigilant with that, Anthony, if we are vigilant with that, if the teachers of Qigong and Tai Chi in this nation will suppress their longing override others, be a master, if they can overcome the longing to be greater than everybody else or anybody else or even somebody else, they can overcome that and allow that power to flow directly between the student and the universe. That's how you do it. And that's what the Declaration of Independence was about. That's a lot of what the Constitution is about. And it's a lot about what this nation and other nations who are struggling to be able to find that self-deterministic approach to living are doing. And Qigong is the ultimate self-determination power tool.
Beautiful. I love it, and I have to agree with it. Maybe the answer to your previous question about, you know, renaming Qigong, we should start a school of Jeffersonian Qigong.
I hope we will.
It was a pleasure talking with both of you tonight. Thank you.
Thank you, Anthony, for calling in. And I also would love to add that there is a similarity between a medical Qigong professional who is diagnosing and treating diseases, if they do this on the basis of a stance that they know better what the patient needs than the patient him or herself, on one hand. And a teacher who teaches the students some Qigong techniques or forms because they know something that the students don't know. And if the students perform the forms in a way similar to the way that the teacher does that, then they're good students and they graduate or they pass the exam. If they don't do it in a way similar to what the teacher does, then they don't pass. So in other words, there is this similarity between the teacher and the clinician, because both of these perspectives are based on the assumption that the professional knows better than the client or the student what they really need. Would you agree with that?
Well, I agree that that point of view exists, but I don't agree with that point of view.
Right. And so when we talked about exactly this agreement between us a few years ago, probably it was 2002, I think, at a national Qigong conference in Portland, I mentioned that I actually stopped doing Qigong services as a clinician. And I also stopped teaching myself a Qigong teacher. And instead, I started calling myself a Qigong coach and kind of launched the profession of Qigong coaching inadvertently. We talked a bit about that, I remember you mentioning that you had never heard anyone else using these two words together as Qigong coaching. And I think this idea of coaching actually allows a professional to transcend this situation where they're supposed to or expected to know better than the client of what the client needs. Because the coach, by definition, doesn't know better.
Mm-hmm.
But
I'm a 1,000% fan of everything that you just said, and I think that it's right on.
Thank you. And so this is actually an opportunity to not only make this profession more democratic, it's also an opportunity for people who actually want to be professionals to find themselves comfortable calling themselves a professional in this field without the baggage of these expectations that they are supposed to know somehow better than the uninitiated or the lay people what is good for them.
I think that I'm going to have to go ahead.
Well, and
I have to jump off.
Right, right. Okay, we will wrap it up in just a moment. I also wanted to suggest that perhaps there is a wonderful word in English called therapeutic. For example, a walk in the park can be very therapeutic, or a cup of tea can be therapeutic, or a nice conversation with a friend can be therapeutic, or practicing Qigong can be therapeutic. And I wonder if it would make sense to actually use the therapeutic as the adjective in place of medical.
I like it. I think that that's definitely a candidate for, one of the ways to do this, although if you go one step further and say therapist, now you're back to the paradigm problem that we were talking about earlier. So I think that the easiest way to do this, the best way to do this, is to understand that the point isn't what's the title. The point is what's happening. And
right.
In my bias would be that for those individuals that are teachers or coaches who are feeling like they're not carrying around the baggage of needing to know more than the student or the client, those are the lucky ones. And those are the students and clients, those are the lucky ones. And the ones who get into relationships with people who believe that if you don't do it right, you're like so often the Tai Chi teachers will say, well, if you don't do this right, then, you might as well just get out of here, or you're never going to get this right. And it's just like, it's the worst kind of, how healing is that, So I think that we're really onto something very powerful here. Hope that we will keep this discussion going. I hope you'll actually bring this concept up in other interviews that you're doing to get opinions from other people. And I would really encourage us as a profession, those of us who are either teachers or coaches or people who are aspiring to become teachers or coaches, to find a training institute that is going to empower you to empower others. And
absolutely.
To look at the possibility of deconstructing that hierarchical view, which is basically left over from the 14th century in China.
Well, thank you so much, Roger. It has been a pleasure to do one more interview with you on our radio talk show, The Secrets of Qigong Masters. And I once again want to thank you and also invite our listeners once again to visit the website where they can learn more about your work. It is IIQTC.org. IIQTC.org. Thank you, Dr. Roger Yanke, for
a
fantastic interview.
Let's do it again
interview.
Sometime.
Definitely.
You're welcome. Take
well,
care now.
Let me remind our listeners that you've been listening to the interview with Dr. Roger Yanke. And I want to also mention to you that you are welcome to visit the website of Dr. Roger Yanke at IIQTC.org. You've been listening to the radio talk show, The Secrets of Qigong Masters, brought to you by Academy of Qidao. Dr. Roger Yanke just talked about the need for Qigong enthusiasts and professionals to find a school that would teach how to empower other people so that you would be able to offer your expertise and your knowledge in a way that is more of coaching rather than a doctor or a teacher position. And that's exactly what the Academy of Qidao offers. It is, as a matter of fact, the first and only school in the world offering professional training in Qigong coaching. To find out more about Qigong coaching programs at the Academy of Qidao, please visit www.qidao.org, which is spelled Q-I-D-A-O.org. Good night, everyone.